I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Hey, let's start this off like we always do with our sponsor for the month, MarsCon 2021. For more information, listen to this.
The world's longest running comedy music concert series is coming from inside your house!
Wow, that went to a dark place.
Virtual MarsCon 2021 is taking place online for free on March 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Hi, MarsCon!
This year's event will have live stream performances by The Great Luke Ski, Devo Spice, Worm Quartet, Insane Ian, TV's Kyle and Lindzilla, Il Nage, Beth Kinderman, Tom Smith, Throwing Toasters, Amy Englehart, an AMA interview with Ookla the Mock, and this year's music guest of honor, Robbie Ellis. We'll also be doing a virtual Q&A with the man who has been playing drums in Weird Al Yankovic's band for over 40 years, John Bermuda Schwartz.
Drum solo!
For info on how to watch, go to MarsCon.com. And for info on the comedy music track, go to MarsConComedy.com.
And do watch out for flying lobsters.
Thanks for listening, funny music fans. And I hope to see you all at Virtual MarsCon 2021.
Can't wait. Gonna be fun. Gonna be lots of good comedy music and other stuff.
Yeah. So let's go straight into our subject for this week. Anastasia. We are looking at the unsung Disney princesses, and this is now a Disney movie since Disney bought 20th Century Fox.
Yeah, and there's long been kind of an annoying thing in the Anastasia fandom where, you know, people will be like, wow, that was such an underrated Disney movie. And, you know, for what, like 20 years or something, you'd have to say, like, it wasn't a Disney film, it was Don Bluth, and it was Fox, and it was, you know.
I can understand why.
Now we can't say that anymore, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, my sister-in-law loves Anastasia, and I would say Anastasia was her favorite Disney princess, and I would say I didn't know you had that much love for Cinderella's sister.
Yeah,
but you know, can't say that no more. Yeah, and I can see why, like. The Disney Renaissance was full swing at that point, 97. And Fox was not the only studio that was, let's say it, copying Disney style. I mean, Bluth did it himself earlier with Thumbelina, and I believe Warner Brothers did it with The Swan Princess. And a lot of animation studios, even the smaller ones, were trying to either copy the look of a Disney movie or the formula of a Disney movie. So you get a lot of animated movies that were musicals that were trying to, you know, get a little bit of that Disney pie. You can't blame them. That was where it was going at the time.
Yeah, and the market was flooded with movies like this at the time, where it was like, well, Disney found the formula again. Let's, you know, like you said, they want a piece of that pie, you know?
Yeah. Before we get going, we do have to talk about, like, we did mention his name, the guy that directed this movie, Don Bluth. And we don't get a lot of chances to talk about Don Bluth, especially since most of his movies are not owned by Disney right now. Yet. Yeah. So, Don Bluth, he grew up a Disney fan. Actually, he grew up in the 30s and 40s watching the Disney movies as they originally came out. So he's been around for a while.
Yeah, as of this recording, he is still with us, and he is 83 years old, bless him.
And still working in the animation business. No longer making movies, per se, but he has pretty much transitioned to a teacher. And as long as he's been in the business, he has a lot to teach people. So after graduating high school, he was able to get a job at Disney. He sent in his drawings to Disney, and they hired him as an assistant animator on Sleeping Beauty. Yeah. None of his artwork.
Like we said, 87 years old.
We just talked about Sleeping Beauty about a month ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but after working on Sleeping Beauty, well, Bluth is Mormon, and he left Disney to be a missionary. He spent 2 years in Argentina on his mission. And after that, coming back to the States, he started working with other animation studios, mostly Filmation, the studio that did the original He-Man and She-Ra cartoons. Anyway, so he eventually makes it back to Disney, and he works on movies like Robin Hood, Winnie the Pooh, The Rescuers. He worked his way up to becoming the animation director on Pete's Dragon, working on his own short for Disney called The Small One. And Bluth, during this time, he came up with another idea, his own idea for a film that he pitched to Disney called Banjo the Woodpile Cat, a story about a country cat that accidentally ends up getting lost in the big city. Cat getting lost in the big city. I think Disney eventually did that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, he brought the idea to Disney, and the head of Disney, Ron Miller, said it wouldn't make any money and rejected the idea. Considering Ron Miller would also kind of ended up firing Tim Burton about a decade later, he's kind of swing and miss there.
Yeah, not a lot of great choices from that guy on keeping staff around, huh?
Bluth wanted to make this project so much, he did it on his own time as an independent project, and was able to get several of the other Disney animators on board with this project. And working on Banjo, the group found more satisfaction working on this passion project than they were working on the movies that they were working with for Disney. Feeling that Disney, that the passion was gone for Disney, that it was more about what can make money versus good storytelling. And we've kind of mentioned that in back in our January episodes about how Disney kind of went from making, it doesn't matter how much it costs, as long as the movie gets made, to how can this movie make us money?
Yeah. It was a bad time for animators in Disney, as we've discussed. You know, we discussed part of this story in Waking Sleeping Beauty. So
yeah. So as we mentioned there, in the middle of production of The Fox and the Hound, Don Bluth and 17 other animators quit Disney to start their own studio, which delayed Fox and the Hound by a year since they had to hire more animators to make up for what they lost. And Don Bluth's animation studio really changed the game, as they were really the first major animation studio to not only challenge Disney, but beat them at their own game. Because you had The Secret of Nim, An American Tale, The Land Before Time, and All Dogs Go to Heaven. Four movies that were cornerstones in our childhood.
Yeah. I mean, Don Bluth was a king when we were growing up.
And yeah, if you were a gamer, you had Dragon's Lair and Space Ace.
Oh, yeah. Dragon's Lair was a major kind of, like, have you played this game? And, you know.
Yeah.
People in my area, we'd heard of it, but no place within a reasonable drive was able to get Dragon's Lair. So any of the time I've personally been able to play or watch footage of it, it's always been like emulators and YouTube and stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is kind of when it hits end, because then you get Rockadoodle, Thumbelina, A Troll in Central Park, and Pebble and the Penguin, and all of those pretty much bombed at the studio, which unfortunately led to the Blue Studios closure.
Yeah. The interesting thing that I will note was that several of his big films were done with Spielberg, and he ended that working relationship with Spielberg just before it started to tank.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. So, oh. I was going to mention that. American Tale and Land Before Time were with Spielberg, which yeah. Brings us to Fox. Several people at Fox had heard that Bluth had worked with Spielberg, and they wanted him to head their brand new animation studio. And Bluth did three films for Fox Animation Studio, the the one we're talking about this week, Anastasia, the spin-off, Bartok the Magnificent, and Titan AE, and was unfortunately also the last major release from Don Bluth, and that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's done things since then.
Music videos, mostly, but nothing as a film.
But not, like, a big feature production.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I really remember liking Titan AE. It's been a little bit since I've watched it, but I remember it rather fondly. I think it just came out at the wrong time.
Probably. Again, whenever that is available on, like, Disney Plus, we might go back to it and, you know, talk about it.
But he's had a longer career than most. I mean, I don't want to sit around being like, oh, let's feel sorry for Don Bluth, because good grief, the man has had an amazing career. And it's still going. It's just, you know, he was already hitting retirement age by the time he did his last feature film. So it's like, yeah. I'm not really hating on him for taking a step back, because goodness knows I probably would be too.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a major player in the history of American animation. And he has inspired so many people, and he's made movies that our generation just absolutely adores.
Yeah. Back in December, they announced that Anastasia was coming to Disney Plus, and that was a big deal. And if you go to Disney Plus and you go to their princess section, Anastasia is there, which is kind of the reason we're putting this up here. Now that Disney owns this movie, does Anastasia belong among the Disney princesses? So, before we get into the film, much like Pocahontas, this is based off a real person. So, Kiki, do you have anything on the real Anastasia?
Boy, the legend of Anastasia of the Romanovs is... It's a persistent one, let me tell you. The movie very much glosses over the bloody history of this. It's just kind of... You hear, you know, in the film, you see people running, you hear noise in the background, you see people chasing them, and then later it's like, and all of her family is dead. Bit more tragic than that, if you want to do. The Romanovs were, you know, the longest reigning Russian dynasty, I do believe. But they had, as the movie says, they had reigned for hundreds of years, this same royal dynasty in Russia. And then the communist revolution happened, and the workers decided, we don't want any more royals. We'd rather not have that system anymore. The problem is, the Romanov family was kind of extensive. And they took the family at first and removed them from the palace, removed them from power, and took them to an undisclosed location where they kept them in exile for several months. I think that they were hoping that they would not need to kill any members of the family. But the people fighting for the return of the Romanovs were kind of stronger. They were hunting for the Romanovs. They had heard rumors that they were still alive. And so they were looking to find the Romanovs so that they could reinstate them as the royal family and kick out the revolutionaries. And unfortunately, it became a situation where the royalists were kind of closing in, and the situation was rather tenuous for the new communist revolution, and it was decided that the only way to prevent the royalists from regaining power was to remove the royals entirely. So one night the family was awoken, taken into the basement of the estate they were living on, lined up against a wall and all executed. Apparently they had trouble executing some of the people, and it took longer and was more harrowing than intended. But this included men, women, and children. I mean, that they needed the entire family gone so that there was no one left of royal blood to put on the throne. There became a rumor, and I'm not entirely sure how it started, but a rumor started that one of the children had gotten away, and it was named as Anastasia, who would have been 17, I believe, at the time of her death. They moved the timeline in the movie. They show the revolution as happening when she's like 8 or something, and then the rest of the movie takes place when she's 18. The revolution really happened when she was like 16 or 17. She spent a few months in exile before the murder of the Romanov family. So somehow the rumor got started that Grand Duchess Anastasia had somehow survived and was living in secret somewhere in either Russia or Europe. And the idea of this like last surviving princess of a once great dynasty who may someday come and retake the throne. It was very kind of King Arthur, you know, it was like the once and future princess or something. But it's kind of swept the popular imagination. And lots of people showed up claiming to be Grand Duchess Anastasia. You know, I'm really the girl, you know. But every now and again, there would be some Grand Duchess Anastasia who would appear, and all the tabloids would be like, no, we've really, really found her this time. However, after the fall of the USSR, and it wasn't honestly until like Vladimir Putin took over Russia and things, you know, I mean, the situation in Russia is still not great, but once things started to open up a little bit and a lot of state secrets were leaking out from the time of the USSR, finally someone kind of said, someone who had been on the squad or whatever had written down, and it basically told roughly the area where they had dumped the bodies of the Romanovs, because they dumped the bodies in a communal grave so that the royalists couldn't find their bones and make them martyrs and all that kind of stuff. But they were basically able to find the grave, and they were able to exhume the bones, basically kind of match them up with brand new DNA processes at the time, and also typical forensic things of, well, this is obviously the bones of an adult man, and, you know, this one is a woman, and all that kind of stuff. And they were basically able to figure out who was who from the remains in the grave. And then they asked some people who shared DNA with the Romanovs, which was pretty much anybody that had royal blood in Europe had all intermarried with the Romanovs at some point. So interestingly, they got DNA from one of the closest living relatives, surviving relatives of the Romanovs, who happened to be Prince Philip of England, who as of right now, as we're recording this, is in the hospital and not doing so well. So, yeah. That news may break shortly, unfortunately. But they asked him if he would be willing to give a DNA sample to test, because he is actually descended from a member of the Romanov line. So they tested his DNA versus the DNA of the bodies that they found in the grave. And yes, they have found all of the Romanovs. Yes, including Anastasia. Yes, we have definitive DNA proof. No, Anastasia did not survive. I am very sorry, but the real Grand Duchess Anastasia was executed at the age of 17.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is an incredibly tragic story, but this myth persisted all the way until the 90s, because honestly, we didn't have that DNA results until right about this time. Or maybe a little later, actually.
After this movie came out, yeah.
So this was kind of the last big hurrah for the Anastasia survived legend, I think. At least until now. Who knows? Maybe in 20 years somebody will be like, no, but really, she, you know.
Yeah.
But this was kind of before we got scientific proof that, no, we found her body, we found her grave. So
this movie technically is a remake, as Fox did another Anastasia film in 1956. But this animated movie puts a little bit more of that Disney spin on it, adding supernatural elements to it.
Yeah, the original film starred Ingrid Bergman and Yul Brynner. Interestingly, but yeah, it's an extremely loose remake, you know.
Like I said, it's adding supernatural elements that you would usually see in a Disney movie.
Roger Ebert, at the time this came out, pointed out that Don Bluth was very consciously trying to ape the Disney style that had appeared during the Renaissance.
You can't beat him, rip him off.
Yeah. And he also ripped off the stunt casting. This movie is stunt casted from A to Z, let me tell you. I had even forgotten half the people who were in this cast, and then I started the rewatch and I was like, oh wow, this movie is jam-packed with even the minor bits are people you know.
Yeah, and even getting a couple of Disney mainstays in here.
Yeah, including that. So let's go through it, because it's a heck of a list.
Let's start with Anastasia herself, Meg Ryan.
Yeah, Meg Ryan. I mean, how much do we really have to say about Meg Ryan, you know?
There is a good story involving Meg Ryan in this movie. We once told a story of how Disney was able to get Robin Williams to do Aladdin by animating the genie doing a lot of Robin Williams stand-up. Same thing here, only they animated a very early version of Anastasia doing Meg Ryan's lines from Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
Showed Meg Ryan the footage, and that's what got her to agree to be in this movie.
Yeah, she had just come off of a series of romantic comedies that had really cemented her as like the biggest star in the world at the time.
She was the love interest in
yeah,
in Hollywood.
If you were going to make a romantic comedy in Hollywood, this was who you cast at the time. So yeah, I mean, she'd already done, by the time she did Anastasia, she had already done When Harry Met Sally, she'd done Sleepless in Seattle, she'd done French Kiss, you know, so I mean, she'd done Top Gun, so
yeah. Her singing voice is a Disney legend in Liz Callaway. The singing voice for Princess Jasmine.
Yeah. So we've actually got an official Disney princess connection. She did Jasmine in the sequel films.
Yes.
Of course. Not in the original Aladdin. She took over. Of course. She also shows up in Lion King 2, and she's a bit singing role in Beauty and the Beast. So, I mean, she had been working with Disney pretty heavily at the time when she was snatched up for this
film. As well as playing the Swan Princess herself. So she was in two Disney ripoffs.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're going to rip off Disney, get a good princess voice.
Yeah, and she's got a lovely voice. I mean, this is she absolutely nails the singing in this film.
Young Anastasia, Kirsten Dunst. I did not know this.
Yeah, at the time, She would have been the big child actress that everybody wanted to get. She had already done Interview with the Vampire by this point. She had done a version of Little Women that was big at the time. And also she was in Jumanji I think she was in Small Soldiers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A few years before she's making out with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, eventually, you know, she would end up in the Raimi Spider-Man films as Mary Jane and all that kind of stuff. But at the time, she was the in child actress. If you needed a young girl for your movie, she was one of the big ones.
And it kind of makes sense for her playing young Meg Ryan in this movie.
Yeah. Interestingly, the other child actress in this film is Lacey Chabert as the singing voice of young Anastasia. Lacey Chabert has kind of... she doesn't really have a career anymore. The last I heard, she did a string of Hallmark movies. But at the time, she was also a child actress that was kind of hitting it big, but she was on TV in Party of Five. A lot of people don't remember she was also the original voice for Meg Griffin during the first season of Family Guy.
Was she in, what was that movie? Lost in Space.
Yes, she was in the Lost in Space feature film that was very bad and awful and horrible. So yeah, she was in that. Eventually she'd do like Mean Girls and stuff later on, but at the time she was mostly known for Party of Five. She did not want to be credited for Family Guy. She thought it would be bad for her career. In the credits for the first season, but that is her voice.
Something that they would come back to and joke about many times over in the series.
Yes, because her career did not do so well, and the person who took her place, Mila Kunis, is having an amazing career still at the time. We're not saying that correlation equals causation there, but it is interesting to note. So, moving on, we have got playing Dimitri, the male love interest, John Cusack.
Yeah.
Wow. You know? At the time, of course, he was still a much bigger star than he is right now. At least he was in more things at the time than he is right now. He had already been in 16 Candles, Say Anything as a teenager, you know, so he already had that. He had started moving on as an adult into, Bullets Over Broadway he had done by this point. And in the same year that Anastasia came out, he would be in the movie Gross Point Blank, which is very well remembered. And about 2 years later, he ended up doing Being John Malkovich, which really got him a lot of critical acclaim.
It would have been quite a scene to see Dimitri holding up a boombox for Anastasia.
Yeah. And interestingly, for the singing voice for Dimitri, they also cribbed another person who had been working for Disney. Once again, a person that had been kind of doing side voices in Disney films, because his singing voice, Jonathan Dukachitz, I apologize for probably butchering that name horribly. My apologies, Jonathan. But he had already been in Hunchback of Notre Dame and Pocahontas for Disney by this point, just doing kind of background voices, you know, filling in for that. So they poached him for Dimitri's singing voice for this. Filling out our kind of last of our main trio of good guys, you have Kelsey Grammer as Vlad. You know Kelsey Grammer. He's Frasier. He's Sideshow Bob. I mean, you don't really have to say. Yeah, he's Beast in the Fox X-Men film. So, you know, yeah, you don't really have to go much further into that.
The only one of the main trio here to actually sing and voice the character.
Yeah. Yeah, he provides his own singing voice because he does have quite an impressive singing voice. Yep. Moving on as our villain, we have Christopher Lloyd as Rasputin.
We talk about him a lot.
Christopher Lloyd or Rasputin?
Christopher Lloyd. he was Judge Doom.
We've already talked about Christopher Lloyd on the show, so we can kind of move on. Singing voice,
Jim Cummings.
Yeah, who we talk about a lot on this show as well. So again, another person who had been working for Disney that they, you know, he had already come off of doing Lion King at this point, I believe. So he
really, really letting that chameleon-like voice, because it combined with the accent that Christopher Lloyd is using, Jim Cummings kind of makes it a very seamless transition into the singing voice.
Yeah, I will say that this is not quite the tour de force of Be Prepared, though. I mean, it's a serviceable villain song, but it's not Be Prepared.
Let's move on.
So, moving on to the other part of the villain team, Bartok the Bat, we have the legendary Hank Azaria.
Yep.
You will know him from The Simpsons. He's Moe. He's Chief Wiggum. He's comic book guy, Bumblebee Man, Carl, and up until recently, Apu.
Yeah.
But he had just started doing kind of live action stuff, most notably The Birdcage just before this.
Mm.
So, but still primarily a voice actor even to this day. So speaking of Disney legends here, we have playing the Dowager Empress Marie, Anastasia's grandmother, we have the amazing Angela Lansbury. Mrs. I mean, come Potts, on, Mrs. Potts. Yeah. You know, they just cribbed her straight from Disney at that point. As Marie's cousin and lady in waiting or whatever she was, we have the incredible legendary Bernadette Peters, best known for working with Sondheim on Broadway. We'll probably see her again by the time this episode goes up. Her Muppet Show episode should be up on Disney Plus as well.
She's also on Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella.
Yeah, she's gonna be in that one on Disney Plus as well. Moving on, we've got in a bit part as the orphanage owner Flemenkoff. We've got Andrea Martin, who is another kind of legendary
comedian,
Broadway actress and comedian. She worked with SCTV in Canada. She's won Tony Awards. Recently, she did an amazing job in a Hulu series called Difficult People, which I really love. But yeah, she pops up every now and then. Used to do a lot of work with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, excuse me. So, you know, she's excellent. I love her, and it was interesting that she just did, like, four lines for this movie.
It's a waste.
Yeah, it's a bit of a waste, but you want to know an even more waste? When I said that everybody, including the background characters, were people you know, I meant it. Because among the kind of, like, fill-in voices in the background that don't even have character names, you've got the likes of J.K. Simmons, J. Jonah Jameson himself, and also Tony Award winner Billy Porter from Kinky Boots, and, you know, just being generally awesome these days. That was kind of before either of them were really well known. I think they were just kind of workaday actors at the time and not really names. But yeah, they're just kind of in the background as random, you know, crowd voices and stuff. How about that for a cast? Good grief. That was a marathon. I am exhausted.
All right. So let's get into this movie proper. So we start in, was it 1918 or 1916, around there?
Yeah.
And the first thing I notice is that for a Don Bluth movie, there is a lot of computer animation in this movie.
Yeah, more than better than others.
Yeah, some of it ages better than others. But again, it was trying to emulate that Disney style, which was using a lot of computer animation at the time. So we start at this wintry ball in 1918-ish. And the big thing going on that we're attending to is Grandma and Anastasia having their little moment as Grandma has to go back to Paris. Anastasia doesn't want her grandma to go, so she gives her a little music box that sings this lullaby that Grandma sings to Anastasia at night, which becomes the song Once Upon a December.
Yeah.
And
the interesting thing is I have this music box. I'm serious. I was a huge fan of this film when it came out. I had the soundtrack, which I played all the time, and then I discovered that I believe now defunct music box company had created a reproduction of this music box. And it has, you know, the dancing couple. I mean, it looks really, really close to the one in the movie, except that it didn't come with a necklace to wind it up. It has like a traditional key on the bottom, but I still have that music box. It's gorgeous, and I love the song. So
yeah, and Grandma also gives Anastasia a necklace that is the key for the music box that is engraved "Together in Paris," as yeah. They're saying that one day we will be together in Paris, and yeah. Unfortunately, this little moment between grandmother and granddaughter is interrupted by Rasputin himself, who has a former aide of the Romanov family, who has cursed them because they fired him.
Do we even want to get into Rasputin? Oh my goodness. You want to talk about a legend that has persisted slightly longer even than the legend of Anastasia.
I don't think the real Rasputin has demonic powers.
Well, that was the charge at the time. I'm not even kidding. It's one of the reasons why he was charged with treason and later murdered. He was a healer. One of the Romanovs, I forget which one, had chronic health problems and stuff. One of the boys, I think. And he kind of somehow got... I'm not super clear on all the ins and outs of the real Rasputin. But he somehow got into the good graces of the family and said, like, I am a healer and a mystic, and I have visions of the future, so I can prophesy what will happen to the Romanov dynasty, and, you know... And somehow he got in there, and the Romanovs said that his treatments worked. So Nicholas and Alexandra really, I think it was more Alexandra really, brought him into the household, and he became like their closest confidant, and he was given like all these accolades and stuff. So he was inseparable from the Romanov family at the time. And then people started thinking that he was leading the Romanov family astray. One of them was the Dowager Empress Marie, Anastasia's grandmother. She absolutely hated Rasputin. Eventually, he was denounced by the Russian Orthodox Church for like witchcraft and false prophecy. I think at one point they suggested he might be the Antichrist. he was apparently a very shady guy. The fact that he had that creepy look. I mean, honestly, they really did base his look in the movie off of the real Rasputin. He had that kind of weird long beard and the sunken eyes and the, you know, it was very strange. But the legend kind of started because a peasant woman tried to kill him at one point by stabbing him in the stomach. She was a follower of a priest who had been denouncing Rasputin for his part in helping in kind of radicalizing this woman. He was later banished and defrocked from the Russian Orthodox Church. Rasputin survived that one, which would give, you know, there's a legend that, like, he was poisoned and survived, and he was stabbed and survived, and he was thrown in a river and drowned, but he survived, and then he was shot in the head and he survived. And like Anastasia, most of that is just legend rather than actual for real. What really happened to him was eventually a group of nobles were like, nope, you've got too much influence on the Romanov family, you're going to harm the dynasty. So they shot him and dumped him in a river. Eventually his body was found. There are, you know, pictures of his body. He didn't survive. He wasn't, like, you know, he didn't resurrect and become a vampire or any of the other things. You know, that's, we know what happened to his body. Like, there we go. So,
but
as
far as this movie is concerned, he sells his soul. They never say to who, but we can kind of guess.
Could it be Satan?
And in one of the, there's some pretty dark scenes in this movie, especially involving Rasputin, because the transformation from proper holy man to wielder of demonic powers, it's a straight up skeleton. This is some Black Cauldron stuff here.
Yeah, and he's got this, like, really interesting reliquary that he carries around that is a traditional villain green, because every villain is lime. And it's got, like, skulls on it and stuff, and it,
in case you didn't know, he
spouts out dragons made of green mist and stuff. Yeah, it's very weird.
So basically, the movie is implying that it's Rasputin's magical influence that starts the revolution.
Yeah. I'm not saying that Rasputin was the cause of the revolution, but I don't think he helped the Romanovs make good choices as the communist sentiment was growing in their nation. Let's just say that. So I'm not saying he was 100% the cause of the eventual Russian Revolution, but he didn't help.
So yeah, as the revolutionaries in this version of events kill the entire family, Grandma Marie.
We actually have to mention the stipulations of the curse, because it is important. He says that he will not die until he sees the last Romanov murdered.
Yeah.
Which becomes very important as the movie goes on.
So yes, the revolution is coming. They kill off the royal family. Grandma Marie and Anastasia are able to leave through the servants' entrance, thanks to a little boy named Dmitri, who will probably never see in this movie the rest of the time. But Rasputin is able to catch up with them, is able to grab Anastasia, but thanks to a little bit of thin ice, Rasputin falls into the ice and drowns, much like what you mentioned before.
Yeah. I mean, he did end his life, at least his body. He was probably already dead by the time they threw him in the river. But yeah, at least his body ended its life in the river.
And yeah, as they try to make the escape to the train to get to Paris, Anastasia loses her grip and falls off the train and hits her head. And Grandma Marie finishes the opening narration saying that she never saw her granddaughter again. Which leads us into our opening number. Have you heard there's a rumor in St. Petersburg?
Pretty as good number. Lots of good jokes in it.
It's definitely has that Bell feeling to it.
Yeah, they're really trying to do that similar kind of thing. We see Vlad and Dmitri going through the town. They sing us their nefarious plot, which is that Marie has offered 10 million rubles if anybody can bring Anastasia to her. So Dmitri and Vlad, who both knew Anastasia as a child, Vlad is seen earlier in the movie as a noble who kind of yells at Dmitri. Dmitri is the kitchen boy who helped them escape. Since they both knew the Romanovs and knew Anastasia, they decide they will find somebody who looks like Anastasia. They will teach her how to act like Anastasia, tell her all about the family, including some kind of insider knowledge that they have.
Yeah, secrets that only the family would know.
Yeah, then they're going to take her to Paris because they have an in with Marie's cousin so that they will be able to see Marie and present their Anastasia as the real deal, take the money and run before anybody realizes the con.
So yeah, this is 10 years later, so 1926, 1928. And yeah, the song itself is pretty nice. And telling us the entire plot. And yeah, it's very much like Belle and Beauty and the Beast, that big bombastic Broadway opening number. And we go to this orphanage where we meet our Anastasia, Anya, as she's called now. She's reached of age and can no longer stay at the orphanage. The owner of the orphanage has offered her a job, got her a job at the fish market, so she can earn her money so she can go to Paris, which the very, very female dog of a orphanage owner kind of makes fun of her. Somewhere, together in Paris, you have no family, you have no name, you're no one. Yeah. As, you know, I mean...
Anastasia, by this point, has amnesia from the bump on her head on the night, you know, when she fell off the train. She doesn't remember who she is, and the only thing she has is the little necklace that her grandmother gave her that says together in Paris. She doesn't know why she needs to go to Paris, but she thinks her family is there for some reason.
Well, if someone gave you a necklace that said together in Paris and you lose your memory and that's all you have, yeah, that's where you're going to go. And
I mean, it makes sense she wants to go to Paris, but why she would be in Russia and her family would be from Paris is the question. Like, why are you in a Russian orphanage if all of your family is together in Paris, you know? So it's a question that she never really asks, like, why am I in a really shoddy Russian orphanage?
It's a ripoff of a Disney movie. Don't ask questions. Yeah. So she goes to the fork in the road where she's been told that the fish market is going to lead her to. And she doesn't want to go to the fish market because she knows that if she goes to the fish market, she will be stuck in Russia forever. And her path is going to Paris, which leads us to meeting our animal sidekick for this princess, Pooka the dog, and our big I Want song.
Journey to the Past.
Journey to the Past, which was not nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song. And it deserved that nomination.
Yeah, that was a tough year. And unfortunately, all the good songs that were nominated were beaten out by Titanic.
Because Titanic.
You want to talk about stuff that plays around with history in a horrifying way.
Anastasia and Titanic. More or less around the same timeline, and yeah, both playing fast and loose with historical facts.
Yeah.
So yeah, Journey to the Past, even today, there are hundreds of covers of this song on YouTube alone. You think Let It Go has covers. Even today, there's always at least one new cover of Journey to the Past that pops up.
Yeah, but it's a banger, though.
Like, it is.
I mean, have you heard this song? It's great.
I did see the movie, so I guess. And yeah, so we get our big Journey to the Past song. As far as I Want songs, this is actually top tier.
Yeah, honestly, you could slot this into a Disney film, and you'd be like, yep, that's a Disney song.
So, she ends up going to St. Petersburg, tries to buy a ticket to Paris, but she doesn't have an exit visa, considering this was, again, the timeline we're at. She needs an exit visa to leave the country, and she doesn't have one. But an old woman at the train station is telling her, go see Dimitri, he will take care of your paperwork, but don't tell him I sent you. It's one of those, it's keep it underground kind of deal. So Dimitri is, in this, he's grown up to be sort of a con man. He can forge papers and give people anything that they want. Meanwhile, Dimitri and Vlad are auditioning women to be Anastasia, and it's not going well. Like, none
apparently
of the women...
they're like in the palace doing this too. So
yeah, they even say it's the old palace. So the palace has been essentially condemned, and that's where Vlad and Dimitri live. Well, they lived there before, so why not?
Yeah, yes. The thing is that she gets there. And Pooka just kind of runs in, so she follows Pooka, and she ends up back in the ballroom that we're in at the beginning of the movie. And, yeah, she triggers, you know, memories, and things start kind of coming to life in a ghostly fashion and swirling around her, and it leads us to probably the biggest song from this film, which is our Once Upon a December. Yeah. The music box song.
It's like, she even doesn't believe it at first. She thinks it's a dream, but yeah, the longer she's staying in this ballroom, the more memories are flooding into her. Memories that she's never had, because, again, she has amnesia. Even to a point where she's dancing with her father. And it's a nice, very beautiful scene. Until Dimitri kind of says, hey, what are you doing here? You know, you're trespassing and all that. Even though that technically they're squatters.
Yeah.
But whatever. And Dimitri sees Anastasia standing by the picture of the Romanov family and sees that she is the spitting image of the Princess Anastasia.
Yeah, and... much more than the kind of funny cast of characters we've seen, you know, old women being like, grandmother, it's me, your teenage daughter, granddaughter, you know.
So yeah,
it's a very funny montage scene. I like the scene of all the Anastasias, wannabe Anastasias coming through.
So Dimitri kind of gives her the once over, saying, well, she's the right age, she has the right hair color, the right eye color. You know, we could pass her off as Anastasia, and you don't know who you are, and if, you know, this could work. And it takes a while, but Anastasia eventually warms up to the idea because, as she quotes, every girl wants to be a princess.
Yeah, and also they have tickets to Paris. And
they have tickets to Paris. That's where she wants to go, is Paris. So they have tickets to Paris because they told her the grandmother lives in Paris, and that's where we're going with Anastasia.
Yeah.
Eventually, she warms up to the idea, saying, hey, if I'm the real Anastasia, I have my family. If I'm not the real Anastasia, I'm already in Paris, and I can find my real family.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win for her, but they don't tell her the plan is to get the money and run.
Yeah. And you have a feeling that these two... do not want to cut her into any part of that.
Yeah, that's it's easier to split the money two ways versus splitting the money three ways.
Yeah, of course. One thing that happens, though, is as soon as she agrees to go to Paris, we go up into the rafters where tiny little baddie Bartok is sleeping up in the rafters. And he's woken up by the reliquary of Rasputin's that he still has. Rasputin drowned without it. Bartok was holding the reliquary in that scene. And it comes to life and starts flying around and dragging Bartok with it. And he overhears them say, hey, she looks a lot like Anastasia. And Bartok's like, oh, goodness, it's the real Anastasia. And gets dragged down to Limbo.
Yes, not exactly the bad place. The middle place.
Yeah, the middle place. Where Rasputin is hanging out all alone because he can't die yet. He's sort of dead. His body is falling apart. He's definitely not alive. But
he's a walking corpse.
Yeah, he can't move on to the afterlife because his curse was that he would not depart this world until after all the Romanovs did. And there's still a living Romanov.
So, yeah. And which leads up, now that Bartok tells him, hey, Anastasia's still alive and she's going to Paris and, you know, all that, leads us into our villain song, In the Dark of the Night.
This is a serviceable villain song, but like I said before, it's no Be Prepared. It really desperately wants to be Prepared.
Yeah, you could see you could kind of mix this with Be Prepared, and you could see the same chord progressions and the same tone and all that.
Yeah, you say chord progression, they literally do rip off. At one point, it's not Be Prepared that they rip off strangely, but there is the chord progression from Hellfire at one point.
Well, he is supposed to be a holy man.
Yeah, but I just love how they mix the aesthetics and the Jim Cummings of Be Prepared with the chord progression of Hellfire, because if you hadn't figured it out, they're trying to do a Disney villain song.
And in this, there's a, you know, a nice little bridge of Rasputin summoning his evil forces to go after Anya and the others, because, you know, he wants to kill them, because that way he can move on to the afterlife.
And this is the point in the film where we start to see that Bartok's not exactly on board with this plan. He's seen what the years have done to Rasputin, and he's like, I do not want any part of this. This does not look fun to me. You know, Rasputin is falling apart. His hand falls off. His lips are sliding down his beard. And Bartok is absolutely like, you know what? You need to give up the curse. You need to give up your anger. You just need to go gently into that good night. It'll be better for everybody.
Hey, we have a sequel to set up for this bat, and we're going to do it.
Yeah. We can't have a sequel for him if he's still an unrepentant villain, so we've already got to start his face turn this early in the film.
Yeah. So we get to the train with our trio there. There's a nice little, I had to laugh at it, where the dog got the window seat, because you will have to get the dog the window seat.
Of course you do. That's an adorable doggy. He's gonna get what he wants.
He's a good doggo. So anyway, they start this. There's already something going on between Dimitri and Anya at this point, even though they're kind of on each other's nerves. But Vlad sees it, even though those two don't.
And honestly, I'm going to say, watching this back as an adult, like as a kid, I was like, of course they're in love. He is a man. She is a woman. That is all you need. They are next to each other. Like, because that's just what movies were like when we were kids. It's like, are there a man and a woman within 5 feet of each other? They're in love. But watching this back as an adult, I'm like, Vlad, really? They've said like two words to each other. They've not shared anything that seems like romantic intent, or even this scene, you know, they're... He's kind of like, you know, get your dog out of the window seat. She's like, no. And then she storms out and Vlad's like, ah, true love. And I'm like, no, that just seemed like genuine annoyance. They don't really do a good job at building up the romance between these two. I'm just gonna be honest with you. This does not really work.
It's not a believable point until like the midway part of the movie.
Yeah, but Vlad is already telling us, these are your love interests for the movie, you better like them.
Yeah, and as this is happening, the evil green spirits have made it to the train and are sabotaging the train. Also at the time, Vlad finds out that their forge passes aren't good. because they've changed the design of the passports. So they need to get off the train before the conductor looks at their passports.
Yeah, so they're hiding in a luggage cart when the spirits kind of disconnect the rest of the train, and we're left with our heroes stuck in a luggage cart attached to a now runaway engine that is going faster and faster and faster and is basically set to explode.
Wow, a Christopher Lloyd movie with a runaway train. Where have I seen that before?
Yeah, I know, right? But, you know, it's a Disney film, so they're able to, you know, use a stray stick of dynamite that's on the train for no particular reason and disconnect themselves from the engine. The engine goes over a cliff, you know.
I love the whole lead up to that, because you have, you know, give me an axe or something to break the, you know, to break us away from the engine. And, you know, he has an axe first, and then, you know, Pooka, the dog, finds the dynamite. Anya lights the dynamite, then hands it to Dimitri. Oh, that'll
do. And he stares at it and goes like, oh yeah, that'll work. And then he stares at it more as the fuse is burning. It's not a long fuse.
Yeah.
And then he shoves it in and jumps out. And you know, I'm like, Dimitri, you are too ridiculous to live. Like, you don't just stare at a lit stick of dynamite in your hand being like, oh yeah, dynamite. That's a good idea. I really approve of how you do that idea. And then you're just like, no.
Is this himbo territory?
Yeah, it's a bit himbo territory. Although Dimitri is kind of a bit himbo throughout the movie, though.
Yeah. So they've exploded the engine off. They're saying, hey, well, we'll just coast to a stop because we have a bunch of tracks. And then the green demons break the bridge, so they're about to fall off. So they have no choice but to jump off the train. As the train...
into a nice soft snowbank, though, because it's Russia.
Yeah. As the train falls off the bridge and explodes, and Marty gets back to 1985.
Yeah, I mean, at least it worked for somebody.
But yeah, we do go back to Limbo as Bartok is still trying to convince Rasputin to give up his evil ways. Not let him give up the evil ways, but give up on this revenge fantasy. Just, you know, give it up, pass on, and, you know, because, like you said, he sees what evil has done to Rasputin, and he does not want that to happen to himself.
Yeah.
Eventually, he says, well, I guess your evil spirits aren't working, so we're just going to throw this thing away now. And Mr. Fantastic, with his own veins, Rasputin catches the throne source of all evil here, saying that if it's destroyed, then he is destroyed because he sold his soul to get it.
Yeah.
That's
so there's your MacGuffin for the movie, everyone.
Yeah. But he, Rasputin has a plan, but he's going to make sure they get to where they're going first instead of immediately going for a second attack because Disney villain.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know. I spent this whole movie, even as a kid, my first time watching it, being like, you have green demon things, just send them to choke her in her sleep or something. Like, why are you setting up all these Rube Goldberg plans to kill her?
So now that the train idea is gone, they need to find another way to get to Paris. So now they have to walk to Germany to get on a bus, to get on a boat, to make it to France.
Yeah. It does give us time for a montage.
Yes, Learn to Do It, where they give Anya a crash course in being a princess, as well as the Romanov family.
But one of the interesting things we find out in this montage is that she's remembering things they didn't tell her.
Yeah, that one of her relatives had a yellow cat.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of a point of Vlad and Dimitri start going like, wait a minute, who is this girl?
Yeah. So they eventually make it to the bus and make it to the boat. As the boat. As Anya successfully learns how to walk like a princess. And they make it to the boat and they give Anya this very pretty looking dress that she at first is not a very big fan of, because apparently the dress is a few sizes too big for her. But she puts the belt on, it's all good.
Yeah, it's not really how dresses work, but okay. I mean, it has like a different collar when Dimitri gives it to her. Like, it's a totally different dress. I don't know if she like traded it to somebody like for a better dress or what, but
it's
that is not
color,
the same
not
dress.
Notice. Well, it's the same color dress. The boys aren't going to notice. So now they need to teach her how to dance like a princess. So they have Dimitri teach her how to dance. She has to be told that the man leads the dance. Because that's how dancing works, apparently. And things start getting involved with Dimitri and Anya as they start giving each other the eyes as they're dancing. Which Vlad is kind of like, uh-oh, I screwed up.
This is not really believable romance. They're dancing and... before they actually do anything that looks or feels flirty, Vlad tells us they're falling in love. This movie is really bad about just telling us romance is happening instead of showing us romance. About, I didn't plan on romance. This might mess up the plan. Oh, you know, silly me. And then when it cuts back to Dimitri and Anastasia, they're like, oh, well, wow, maybe we should stop dancing. I'm getting dizzy. And, you know, like, they're just out of it and looking at each other's eyes. And that is the first time that they legitimately seem like they might be getting into each other, you know, on that level. But, again, we've already been told at least twice in the movie now, like, they're a couple. They're super into each other, and this is the first time the movie has tried to, like, show it.
Maybe Don Bluth isn't that good at telling love stories.
I don't know.
Not all of his, anyway. It's getting late, they're all going into sleep. Puka finds the music box that apparently Dimitri found when they made everyone escape. And
she just looks at it and goes like, oh, that's really pretty. Is it a jewelry box?
Yeah. And they all go to sleep. And this is where Rasputin gets his next plan to invade her dream because she's asleep. And makes her have this very pretty dream of her old family. They're alive and they're going to go swimming. So in her mind... let's go for a swim, but in real life, let's jump off the boat into the raging sea and die.
Yeah. Fortunately, Dimitri doesn't sleep through Puka barking, being like, hey, Anastasia's gone. Somebody help. So the barking wakes up Dimitri, and he goes looking for Anastasia and eventually finds her on the prow of a boat... about to jump into the sea. This sounds really familiar somehow. What else happened in 1997 with a boat and a love story and a... No, it's not coming to me. Anyway.
You know what? Rasputin would have succeeded if he had not made it into a nightmare.
Yeah. She's absolutely about to jump in the water, and then the dream changes into a nightmare and is like, yes, jump to your death. And she hesitates just long enough for Dimitri to save her. So it's like, that's on you, buddy.
And he spills the beans by telling the Romanov curse, the Romanov curse.
Which she remembers when she wakes up and starts muttering about the Romanov curse and crying and...
yeah, this is on you. This is on you, Rasputin.
Yeah, so that was a really, really good plan that you fumbled the ball like right at the 1 yard line on that one.
Yeah. So he decides that Rasputin is he's going to go topside and do it himself, despite the fact that he's technically dead.
Well, he's only mostly dead.
Somehow he's able to make it back to the surface world. We're never given an idea why. He just says, "I'm going to go up top." And this is where we meet Sophie. Yeah, apparently Sophie and Vlad have a thing going on.
Yeah, you have a feeling that maybe they were flirting and heading that way before the revolution. When she was still living in and around the palace and stuff.
Yeah, Vlad is
as
like,
was he.
Once they say, once they're, you know, they're heading towards, right before the big montage of training, Vlad is saying, I get to see Sophie, I get to see Sophie. And as soon as they meet him at the door, he's all flirtatious with Sophie, Sophie's flirtatious with Vlad.
They have better chemistry than our two romantic leads for this movie.
Yeah.
In like the 5 minutes that we see their flirtation, you buy them as a couple more than you buy Anastasia and Dimitri through the entire film.
And as this is happening, another fake Anastasia has gone to see Grandma Marie, and she says, I will see no more women pretending to be Anastasia. My heart has been broken enough. No more. And from that point of view, from Empress Marie here, she's been going through this for 10 years. For 10 years, every girl and young woman around has been coming to her, claiming to be her long-lost granddaughter. She is done with it.
Yeah, she just, you know, it's got to be difficult. Like, you know that she wants her granddaughter back, and she knows that her granddaughter survived at least the initial revolution, you know. But did she survive after that? You know, of course, Marie does not know at this point. But because there's such a substantial sum of money on the line, any random woman who can fake a Russian accent is going to be like, Grandma, give me money! You know, and like, that's got to hurt because you're actually looking for somebody that you really, really care about. This isn't just like a, I need somebody to put a tiara on to keep up appearances. Like, this is my granddaughter who was the dearest person in the world to me, and I just want to see her again.
I mean, she says it in the movie that Anastasia's her favorite granddaughter. Playing favorites, Murray?
Yeah, everybody knows there are favorites.
Yeah.
Not even friends. Like, hey, you have all my children equal. You do not. You do not. You have a favorite. Just admit it.
So, Sophie apparently goes along with this plan of getting Anya and Marie together, saying that, well, the Russian ballet's in town and we never miss a performance, wink.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that this is kind of the big reveal of the film from Dimitri's standpoint. I mean, the audience already knows.
Yeah.
But this is when Dimitri clues in that this isn't a random orphan girl.
Because Sophie gives her the rundown.
Yeah, Sophie is asking questions. She asks questions of all the candidates to see, you know, as a first test. And so she asks things like, you know, when were you born? Where were you born? How do you like your tea? That kind of thing. Bits about the family and everything. But then she asks, like, how did you escape? And Dimitri immediately winces because he's like, oh, yeah, we forgot to tell her how Anastasia actually made it out of the palace, which Dimitri knows because he was there. And without hesitating, she says, well, there was a little kitchen boy and he opened a wall and we went through the wall. No, I know that sounds silly, but that's what I remember. And Dimitri immediately realizes, like, I didn't tell her how they escaped. And she immediately knew that there was a kitchen boy who opened a secret panel in the wall that was used by the kitchen staff. And, you know, and immediately Dimitri is like, uh-oh, I think we've actually found the real Anastasia.
So they're going to the Russian ballet, and Sophie has agreed to take Anya shopping because she needs a proper outfit to wear to the ballet. And we get our next big musical number, Perry Holds the Key to Your Heart.
This is entirely a song that was just written because Bernadette Peters needed a song.
When you have your Bernadette Peters, you use her.
Yeah, it's all right. It's a passable song. There are a lot of cultural references in the animation.
Moulin Rouge, the Chanel stores are your product placement.
Well, but I'm also talking about like They have, like, Maurice Chevalier, Sigmund Freud shows up at one point. Yeah. Like, there are all these kind of famous people from the time that you're like, yeah, 90s kids movies and their Freud references. That's what was hot then, you know? Like.
And you want to talk about chemistry between Vlad and Sophie. Sophie kicks her shoe onto the dance floor where the French girls are dancing, and he actually goes up on stage and gets the shoe for her. Which, again, more of a romantic chemistry moment than we've seen between Anya and Dimitri.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a cute scene, too, because he's genuinely embarrassed by the dancing girls, and instead of staring at the dancing girls, all he wants to do is get back to Sophie, which is so sweet.
And Vlad kind of gets jealous when Sophie kind of picks up one of the Frenchmen to walk away with.
Yeah, it's adorable. I just, these two are the movie romance. It's, you know.
And yeah, and we get a little bit of Dimitri kind of being sad because he realizes Anya is the real Anastasia and knows that she's royalty and he's a commoner and it can never be. He, you know, it's him admitting to himself that he loves her and they can never be together because he is not royal.
Yeah.
It's a nice little moment there. And it's after our big song and dance number, Dimitri lets Vlad know the secret. It's like, you know, she's the real deal. I know because I was the boy that opened the wall. But we're not going to tell her that. We're going to go with the plan as intended.
And the thing is that this entire time, they've been telling Anastasia, you could be her. I mean, you might be her. Let's take you to Paris and see if you are her. And if you are, you'll need to know how to walk this way, and we'll remind you of your own memories and stuff. But they haven't actually told her that it's a con, and they're just there to get money.
Yeah. A nice little, I don't know if it's a Disney dig or not, but the ballet that they're seeing is Cinderella.
Yeah, but also, this is a Cinderella story that they're doing. You know, yeah, it's probably a dig at Disney, but also Anastasia is meant to be a very similar Cinderella story. She's a poor girl who they teach to be, you know, who ends up being a princess and all this kind of stuff. Interestingly, this movie was also kind of grew out of the fact that they had originally intended to do an animated version of My Fair Lady. So a lot of this about teaching Anastasia to be a princess and proper and, you know, hold herself correctly and all that kind of stuff is a holdover from when they were going to do My Fair Lady.
So Anastasia almost backs out because she's so nervous over the whole idea of meeting someone that could be her grandmother. But Dimitri, well, we have another moment between the two. Like, it looks like they're going to have a kiss or whatever, but they both of them back out before admitting their feelings. And Dimitri says, I'm going to introduce you, and then everything's going to go to plan. It starts going as planned, and then once he said his name is Dimitri, Marie instantly knows who he is. Like, you're that con man from Russia. You're only here for the money. To which Anastasia hears, again, this is a romantic comedy trope.
You lied to me. I can never love you.
Not to be outdone, Dimitri is begging Marie to talk to Anastasia. She won't. Eventually running to her car. Dimitri steals Marie's car.
With Marie in it.
With Marie in it, saying, you are going to talk to this girl. Persistent, aren't you? As persistent as you are.
But he also tells her, you know, I was the little boy. You know, I'm the one that helped you two out of the palace that night. Like, this is her.
Even giving her the music box.
Yeah.
Saying, please talk to her.
And this does intrigue Marie. Like, he knows the story, and they were the only three that were there. You know, so who told him this story if it's not him, you know?
So Marie's intrigued and goes to talk to Anya. Again, very skeptical of the situation. And Anya saying, you know, I don't know if I'm her. I just want a family. You know, aren't you interested in the money? No, I'm not interested in the money. I just want to find a family. And
I think that's the best thing, because everybody we've seen before is like, no, oh, I absolutely am the Grand Duchess Anastasia. And when she asks, you know, Anya, like, who are you? And she's like, I was hoping you could tell me. I don't know. I look kind of like your granddaughter, and I've got memories that I can't quite explain. Maybe not, but you're the only one that can tell me for sure, you know?
Yeah, and it's until Anya smells the oil that Marie uses on her hands, which is smells of peppermint. And then Anya goes into the story and how she spilled a bottle of that oil on the rug at the palace, and now the rug always smelled of peppermint, which only Anastasia would know that. Not even Dimitri would know that.
It's not something that they told to anybody else. And she would talk about how she would curl up on the carpet and smell it because it smelled like her grandmother when she missed her grandmother when she was away. But the thing that really seals it is, as she's telling the story, she's fiddling with a necklace, and Marie asks what it is, and she said, it's the only thing I have, you know, that it's always been with me, and it's the key to the music box. So Marie pulls out the music box that Dimitri gave and uses the key to open the music box, and they sing a little bit of Once Upon a December, that they sang at the beginning of the movie, and Marie is like, nope, you're the real Anastasia, you know, this, obviously, you're my granddaughter.
And yeah, Anastasia unlocks more memories. Old Rasputin is getting the final touches of his big plan.
And he's gonna attack at the party that Marie will be throwing to reveal the real Anastasia to the world. And also, it would destroy Marie as well, even if it didn't kill her, you know, she'd be too heartbroken to...
Yeah, right after getting her granddaughter back to see her killed.
Yeah, and it would be, you know, I mean, a villain likes a show. I mean, if his proclamation in front of everybody... if I will see the end of the Romanoff line, and then, you know, if he does it in public at one of the most highly publicized events in years, then, yeah, everybody's going to know, like, Rasputin's the real deal, you know?
And, yeah, she gives her the tiara of her being the Grand Duchess, Anastasia. And the next day, Dimitri comes and rejects the reward. You know, he doesn't want the 10 million rubles. He's happy that Anya's happy, and he'll walk away. You know, what made you change your mind? My mind wasn't changed. It was my heart. Again, giving the big, oh, I'm in love with her, Theo, you know. But he never tells Anastasia he never took the money. And Vlad has once again taken his position as a member of the royal court. And you get a very cute picture of Pooka in a little crown, because he's a little prince now. And apparently...
Well, yeah, he's so cute. And he's got the little... I like that he's got a belt with, like, a little sword on it, which is adorable.
You know Anya insisted on that. So, yeah, and Vlad tells Dimitri, you're making a mistake, don't walk away from her. And he says, you know, princesses don't marry kitchen boys. So he can never be with Anastasia because he's not royal. He's a commoner. It can never happen. And upon finding out that Dimitri didn't take the money, she's going after him. She's going after her man. Only to end up meeting up with Rasputin. This is the first time since the beginning of the movie that Anastasia and Rasputin have been on screen at the same time.
Yeah, she didn't remember Rasputin until she sees him again.
Yeah.
And this whole time she didn't even realize that Rasputin was, like, coming for her, except for waking up and saying something about a Romanov curse, you know?
You're not a very good villain, Rasputin.
Yeah.
You could have kept this all on the DL, but you had to make yourself known, because villain, egomaniac kind of deal.
Yeah, before we get into the final fight with Rasputin, can we actually say something that I absolutely love in this film? Because it's not quite historically accurate, but it's close enough to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So in these final couple of scenes where we see Marie, you know, here she is, the Dowager Empress Marie in all of her royal finery at the ballet and again at the party. She is wearing a very interesting tiara.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a bunch of kind of circles, linked rings on her head, made out of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real tiara. And it really did belong to the Romanovs. And if you watch this movie and go, that tiara looks really familiar to me, it's because it is Queen Elizabeth II's favorite tiara. It is called the Grand Duchess Vladimir tiara, and it actually is, it was part of the Romanov jewels. It was taken from Russia by the Grand Duchess Vladimir, so it wasn't with Marie, but it is close enough you can kind of fudge it that maybe Grand Duchess Vladimir let Marie borrow it or something, you know? Mm. But Grand Duchess Vladimir was one of the last Romanovs to flee the country, and she was able to make it out with a significant amount of jewelry and stuff, and she began to sell part of it off. She kept the tiara until her death, and then after her death it was sold to the British royal family, and it eventually became the favorite tiara of Queen Elizabeth II, and she wears it constantly to big events. It's her favorite thing to wear. So I absolutely love, as kind of, you know, I'm one of the few goofballs that when I watched this movie again, I was like, Marie is not wearing the Vladimir tiara, is she? And then I was like, but wait, because strangely, I am one of those people that knows way too much about silly things like the tiaras worn by the Queen of England and stuff. So it was just one of those things of the rewatch. I didn't realize, you know, I didn't know that information when I was a kid, but rewatching it again, I was like, wait a minute. And then I thought, but historically, that's probably the closest thing we have to actual historical fact in this entire movie, is the fact that the Dowager Empress Marie probably wore that tiara at some point. So there you go. There's your weird little bit of sort of historically accurate, but not in this movie.
Yeah. So yeah, Rasputin goes after Anastasia. Anastasia kind of stands her ground. I'm not afraid of you. As Rasputin is causing damage to the bridge that they're on, almost throwing her off. Enter Dmitri, who was at the train station, who just decided to turn around because he couldn't leave Anastasia because he loves her. And you know. And is able to try to save Anastasia from Rasputin, but it backfires horribly.
He gets on one of the worst pieces of CGI in this entire movie, which is a horse statue that's sitting atop a bridge, and Dmitri climbs on top of it as it comes to life and tries to use it as a steed, and it doesn't go well for him.
Dmitri is able to distract, and does all this, is distract Rasputin enough that he drops the evil
reliquary,
and it ends up under right by Anastasia's foot as she steps on it. It cracks, all of the evil beings start to disappear. Evil horse statue CGI thing destroys itself as Rasputin starts losing his powers. And in one of the most rarest moments in, even Disney didn't do this at the time, the princess kills the bad guy.
Yeah, and it's not like, oops, he tripped and fell. And hit. No, she stomps that reliquary into dust.
This is for Dimitri. This is for my family. And this is for me.
Yeah, and I mean, she just absolutely wails on that thing until it is crushed and all the magic is drained out of it. At which point, in a really rather horrific scene for a kid's movie, Rasputin immediately ages and decomposes right in front of our eyes until he is a skeleton, and then he crumbles into dust, and then he is blown away by the wind.
Yep.
And it is a harrowing scene. Of
again, that's like, right out of the Black Cauldron. Disney would never do that gruesome of a death during the entire Renaissance, but Bluth would.
Yeah, and you see like every bit of it on screen. It's kind of like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah. You know, with the melting face and everything. It's a very
family friendly version.
Scene. So, yeah, slightly less bloody. It's more, you know, green magic and stuff oozing out of him rather than blood.
Yeah, so yeah, good for Bluth for doing something Disney wasn't even doing at the time.
Yeah, she is a very proactive woman throughout the entire film. They make it a point of she's very competent. She can figure out her own thing. She figures out solutions to problems before the men do sometimes. They don't do it as a way to downplay the men, I don't think, either, because the men are also very capable.
I think it's to accent the fact that she kind of grew up on the street, so she kind of had to become a little bit of a street smart.
Yeah, she grew up in a Russian orphanage in the 20s. It's not, you know, not probably the best place in the world.
Yeah, so during the scuffle, part of the horse statue falls on Dimitri's head, knocking him out. And for a moment, Anastasia thinks he's dead. But he's alive, and they have their moment, and they finally, you know, are able to accept each other's feelings and whatnot, but Pooka finds the tiara. What are they going to do now? She is the princess. What are they going to do? Dissolved to Marie holding the tiara with a letter saying, I will be back soon, but there's something I need to do first. As Anya and Dimitri have eloped. They have gotten married. And that's kind of where we end our story, as they've gotten on a little cruise ship, they've gotten married, and they've taken Pooka with them on their little honeymoon. But Anya says that she'll be back to claim her crown very soon.
And we end on kind of a weird little stinger, which is we go back to Bartok, who's kind of watching the boat as it sails off and is like, aw, you know, sweet kids. And all of a sudden, another bat appears out of nowhere and kisses Bartok. And then he's like, oh, that's good. And then it ends.
Yeah, that's kind of an unearned ending there. Like, yes, Bartok was never evil, but he didn't really deserve to have the love at the end. We have a sequel to set up for this bat. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Also, it's like, your reward for not being evil isn't just a random woman. Like, come on.
But that's
stop that trope. Women are not trophies for not being a villain. Like,
yeah. But as we said, you know, we did get a sequel, Bartok the Magnificent, which follows Bartok. And not so long ago, this got turned into a Broadway musical.
Yes, it did. And it actually looks pretty good, what I've seen of it. I haven't been able to see the, you know, It didn't come out that long before, unfortunately, the world got thrown into a tailspin, so I was never able to, you know, see it on tour or anything.
You would have probably have gone to the big city to see it, because that's how it seems to happen in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were on a national tour right when COVID hit.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the stage production will ever return, because right around the time this was on Broadway was when the Disney buyout happened. So I don't know if Disney would want to put this in one of their, you know, leagues of Disney musicals. It would be cool if they, you know, once everything was opened up again, that Disney would at least continue to have this play be touring, or at least, if nothing else, you know, license it for schools and other, you know, regional productions to do, you know?
Yeah. Just given how long it takes to put on these things, I'm pretty sure that whoever owns the rights to make the stage musical probably bought those rights from Fox before it was part of Disney. So Disney may not have a say in that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much Fox retained of those rights and how that may have transferred over, but given the timeline of how long it takes to produce a musical like that, I would say that they probably bought the rights prior to the merge, and so there may still be some, you know, not everything is quite melded together under the Disney banner yet, but I don't know.
So there is one thing I will give credit to this movie. They saved the kiss for the very end of this movie.
Yeah, and like after they were married. So it's a very traditional Disney thing of where you see, like, you know, Cinderella in the wedding dress kissing the prince and stuff, yeah. You know.
Yeah, and for a Disney ripoff, this is probably the best of the best in terms of studios that were trying to copy Disney. To the point, again, we've said it, people thought this was a Disney movie.
Yeah. If you know anything about animation styles, this does not look like a Disney movie, although it's probably the closest Bluth ever got.
It doesn't look like the Scratch style that Bluth was known for.
Yeah, it's very definitely attempting to be Disney, if nothing else. So let's talk about, you know, I know that this wasn't made under the Disney banner, but is this still a good movie as an adult? Your thoughts?
It still holds up for the most part, at least. So if this was a Disney movie, many would consider this a classic. On its own, it's still pretty good.
I'm going to say, you know, like I said, I really loved this film when it first came out. The soundtrack was my favorite thing. I've got the music box, you know, blah, 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 the whole thing. Watching it as an adult, you know, it's been quite a while since I've actually sat down and watched the whole thing. It does not flow as well as I remember. It's not a bad movie. I'm not gonna say, like, well, this is one you can only enjoy with nostalgia goggles. No, it's not that. It's still a decent and serviceable film. However, it didn't feel as magical to be watching it as an adult as it did when I was younger. I don't know what that is. I think I see a little more of the flaws and the tropes that it used, and it doesn't, you know, we've just come off a run of some really good movies.
Mm-hmm.
A stinker or two, but we've come off of some classics and some new classics. And this one, it just felt like a little bit of a letdown compared to how I remembered it. But it's still, it's a decent movie. If you've never seen it before, it's still reasonably good. You'll enjoy it. It may not go down as your favorite, but it's a good, you know, it's a good film to put on and watch if you got an evening to kill.
So does this have the magic?
A little bit.
I would say so. So let's ask the question we've been asking this month. Does Anastasia deserve to be part of the Disney princesses? Let's forget that this was not originally a Disney film. She ticks all the boxes. And like I said, she did things that even Disney princesses didn't do. She killed the bad guy.
Yeah, by Disney standards, I would not be, you know, the only thing this doesn't tick is that Disney princesses have to be under the Walt Disney Animation or Pixar banners. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things that allow you to be, which is why Princess Leia from Star Wars is never going to be a Disney princess, but as far as official line, mm-hmm. Because her films were not made by Walt Disney Animation or Pixar originally. So by that token, Disney is probably never going to make Anastasia a Disney princess just for that reason alone. If I were in charge of it, she does tick all the boxes. Me personally, I would feel icky about putting like a real life person in the Disney princesses, but Disney's already broken that rule with their, you know, Pocahontas, which we've already talked about how horrifically problematic that portrayal is. So this isn't any worse than Pocahontas on that front. So maybe, you know, if this were just a fictional character completely, which she basically is, you know, just using the name of a real person. But if this were an entire fictional story divorced from any kind of reality, then yeah, I'd be all for it. She has every one of the things, but it muddies it a little bit for me personally because, you know, I mean, there are still living descendants of this family.
Yeah, well, again, same with Pocahontas.
I mean, this is barely out of living memory. This is my grandparents' generation. You know, it's... So, it's... Pocahontas was at least a couple of hundred years out by the time Disney did it. Not saying that there weren't, like, you know, people who were probably... descendants or whatever, but like, you know, there was nobody who like met any member of that story, whereas there are still people living who knew some of the people portrayed in this film. So it gets a little muddy for me, but kind of on her own merits, yeah, she does tick all the boxes of Disney princess. So
and yeah, Disney does have this movie in their princess category on Disney Plus, so at least someone at Disney believes she should be at least considered.
Yeah.
So that's all we got to say about Anastasia. If you haven't seen it, give your you haven't seen it in a while, give it a chance.
The music, at least, is brilliant. Yeah. This has some really amazing songs in it.
That would really rival Disney in terms of songs.
Oh yeah.
So let's move on. We're going to kind of stay on Don Bluth for a bit because we're going to take another Don Bluth film next week, the original Pete's Dragon.
Yeah. So, this may be a first watch for me. If I ever watched this in my childhood, I have no memory of it.
I used to watch Pete's Dragon all the time as it would air on the Disney Channel, but we've already established that you did not get the Disney Channel until much later in your life. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see if Pete's Dragon has stood the test of time, as it were. And we will talk to you all then. As they say in this movie, Das Vidanya! Das Vidanya!
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.